What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Our Lives in Medicine. This episode features orthopedic surgeon Dr. Nancy Shipley. Dr. Shipley is a woman of many talents, from managing marketing for a snowboarding company to managing a Qigong guru to improving and saving lives in the OR. Dr. Shipley also hosts The 6%, a podcast about women excelling in historically male-dominated fields. Check out this episode as we discuss her humble beginnings, journey through medicine, and the things that make us all human. I hope you enjoy. And if you do, please feel free to share the episode with others, like us on Instagram at Our Lives in Medicine, and please rate and review us on iTunes. You have no idea how much that really helps and how much we really appreciate it. And as always, if you need some good beats to study or get some work done or just catch some good vibes, stay tuned to the intro and outro and look at the show notes for the artist shoutouts. I hope you have a great one and cheers to the future. Shipley, how's everything going?
It's wonderful. How about you?
Awesome, awesome. Did you have a good day in clinic?
Yeah, it was good. It was a nice, busy clinic, so I welcome that.
I was going to say, do you prefer kind of a slow day to kind of just have time to do notes and everything, or do you like a just slam-packed day?
I like to just keep moving. I find that if I sit down too much, it slows me down.
Isn't it? It's kind of funny. Like I'm on inpatient peds right now, and I'll have one day where I have two patients to round on, and I find myself like nodding off at the computer because I'm like trying to drag out the time before rounds. But then the next morning I'll come in and we had six admissions overnight, so I'm like sweating at the computer trying to get through all the notes. So
yeah,
those days are tough too. Both days are tough, but it's fun overall. It's really fun. So I know what you mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're from Southern California originally, and mm-hmm. what part again?
So I grew up in Hacienda Heights. That is kind of essentially greater LA. Most people I talk to haven't heard of it, but it's basically part of LA County. Everything kind of blends in to the next town, as you know, down in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my dad's from Palmdale. I know Hacienda Heights for sure, so that's cool. And my uncle actually lives out there still. He's in the sheriff's department, so that's cool. But you're not in California anymore, right?
No, I'm in Portland, Oregon.
How are you liking Portland so far?
I love it. This is, and you know, and it may change depending on the season. I'm joking, but just a little bit. we do get a lot of rain in the fall, the winter, the spring, but our summers are absolutely glorious. It's pretty much, you know, like 80 degrees and dry. It's not humid. We have blue skies. But then once the rain starts, it kind of starts and it doesn't stop for a while.
I've heard it's an awesome city. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to barge in, but yeah, I heard it's an awesome city.
Yeah, it really is. There's so much more here that I think outweighs any dreariness when it's raining. And in fact, we've been here, my husband and I, our family's been here now about 10 years or so, and we've really gotten accustomed to the drizzle, the light mist, we like to say. And it really doesn't stop us from getting outside and hiking. Growing up in Southern California, if you had told me that I would enjoy going hiking when there's a little bit of a light rain and it's like 59 degrees, I would have said you're crazy. But it's the best time. Like, it's not crowded and you just need good gear. No one here carries an umbrella. Everybody wears just, like your waterproof Columbia jacket. Because we were, our Columbia's got their home office here, and if you have the right gear, you'll find Portlanders still outside doing stuff even in inclement weather.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, so you can kind of take advantage of everything and don't have to deal with the foot traffic or car traffic because of the little bit of rain. That's nice. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, it's a great
So
town.
that's cool. I'm definitely it's definitely high on my list of places to visit. So I'll have to reach out to you if I ever make it out that way when the world opens up.
Perfect.
That sounds good. So, one of the first questions I like to ask, and I know we talked on the phone, and so I already know the answer, but your route into just kind of getting into medical school and residency was really pretty fascinating. You mind kind of telling me about that?
Yeah, so I took a really unusual route to medical school. I took several years off. I entered undergrad thinking, hey, I might decide to go pre-med. Maybe I'll go the pre-med track. I was at UCLA, and as you can probably guess, there were, almost 5 million people, not exactly 5 million, but a lot of people who wanted to go into medical school coming right out of high school and entering as freshmen. So I very quickly got weeded out of that, like in my first class, in my first couple of weeks. It was like boom, I was out of pre-med. But I ended up being a psych major. I enjoyed my time there and it really helped me grow as a person and grow into an adult, which I think is the number one role of college. And I ended up not applying to medical school out of college. I ended up not really knowing what I wanted to do. I took a job in the snowboarding industry because at the time I had discovered snowboarding and I was like, I would love to work in this industry. So I did sales and marketing for a tiny little company. And it was back when there was the hugest boom of new snowboard companies out there. And I kind of jumped on that bandwagon for a little while. Had a great time, made like pennies. But I really didn't know what I wanted to do with myself. And then I ended up running conferences and helping to run a small business for my stepdad for a couple of years. And he himself has an interesting story where he is does Qigong and teaches seminars. He's considered a Qigong master, kind of like Kung Fu masters or Kung Fu masters. And so I helped run his business and travel around and do seminars. And while I was working with him, I also went to acupuncture school for a little while. So I mean, you couldn't possibly like I think veered further away from the straight and narrow path to go to medical school straight out of college, right? So I took a bunch of interesting detours, learned a lot during that time, but kind of came full circle when I realized I actually do want to go into medicine. And I ended up working full time while taking my post-bac classes, did well that time around, and
Good.
scored well on the MCAT and got into medical school. So I forgot to mention it, along with having a great time in college, I graduated with a 2.99999, which I round up to a 3.0.
As you should, yeah.
So that was my undergrad GPA. You don't get into med school with a 3.0. And so the second time around, when I'd said, hey, I actually think I do want to go into medicine, I was very serious about it. And The workload was crazy because I would try to take a full load of classes while I was working 40 hours during the day, and I would piece together extension classes, any class I could get into. And I think I went to maybe three or four different universities. I went to Cal State LA. I took classes at Cal State Long Beach. I went to UCLA Extension. I went to Cal State Fullerton, like wherever I could fit in a class and make my prereqs. That's what I did as I was running all over town and often traveling for my job. And so actually, I think I probably thrive under those conditions where things are a little bit hectic and I just am pressed for time. I do better than if you give me a light, easy schedule because I just don't, I think I don't perform as well. So I did well in my classes. I studied hard and I got in. So definitely a circuitous route to get to medicine.
Yeah, but ultimately led you in the right place, so that's
Yeah,
awesome.
for sure.
So you said you worked for the snowboarding company. It was like during the snowboarding boom. That's pretty cool. I personally want to ask just a quick follow-up on the Qigong because I'm a huge fan of martial arts, traditional mixed martial arts, everything. What was
Yeah.
your kind of role for your stepfather's company?
Well, he was at that time when I started working for him, still a pretty recent immigrant from mainland China, and I helped him organize his classes in different states. So I would it, almost like a conference, essentially a conference planner, where I would identify a locale, I would have a local contact, people who are interested in taking his classes, and help with the marketing, getting people enrolled, booking with hotels, putting packages together, and handling the bookkeeping, excuse me, for his business. And kind of ran his business, set up seminars. And during the classes, because his English was not his first language, I would help translate for him. And so it was a crash course in learning the terminology. I winged it quite a bit because my Chinese is terrible. I cannot read or write. And so everything was kind of vocally, verbally learned. And I would learn the material so that I would know what he was talking about. And I'd be able to translate what he was saying into English and also facilitate questions being asked by the audience because the audience was like 99% English speaking, not Mandarin Chinese speaking.
That's
So
really cool.
yeah, so that was my role there, and he's legit. He's kind of the real deal. When he first came to the US, he was actually featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, that old show.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the unsolved mystery. And they had an actor, a young actor, reenact my stepdad's youth, in which he actually went to go live in a cave with a master because it was exactly how you read about it and hear about it in the movies. Like with Kung Fu, you want to study with somebody, you become an apprentice and you sweep the floors and you clean for them, and then maybe eventually they'll teach you a nugget of wisdom, kind of like Daniel-san. It's like, why am I painting
Yeah.
this fence?
Right.
It's you painted this fence because eventually you'll learn a little bit of martial arts from that, and I think Qigong worked much in the same way. So yeah,
That's
like I said,
awesome.
it's a whole nother story in and of itself.
Yeah, but that's really sweet. And then it's kind of crazy how that and then the snowboarding industry all led you into medicine. So that's pretty awesome. And I remember you saying on the phone that you kind of first were considering maybe family or IM. How did you kind of switch from that to deciding to do ortho?
Well, when during my time with my stepdad, I learned a lot about holistic medicine and complementary medicine, and I thought that it would be, when I did decide to go to medical school, that it would be interesting to integrate that, and I still find a place for it, but maybe less directly so in my current practice of orthopedics. But at the time, I was thinking, okay, well, if I am in family practice or I'm in internal medicine, maybe on an outpatient basis, with the patients, I would be able to bring in a little bit of that, the studies in complementary medicine and what I've learned in acupuncture. But then, you know, once I got into school and had a little bit of exposure to the different subspecialties and different career paths, it was so clear to me that I was a surgical type that I switched gears.
What do you define as a surgical type in your words?
I like to work with my hands. And I found that when I rotated through surgery, that those were the days that were the most fun for me. And those were the days that, even though they sometimes were long, went the fastest. And I would, if I was in a surgery, I would be so focused, hyper-focused on what was happening that I would lose track of time. Whereas, and no offense to the people out there who are in primary care, I look up so much to my primary care colleagues. But like I would be on the medicine rotation or a primarily outpatient clinic type of rotation. And it just felt like my days were so long and I had a lot more trouble keeping my attention engaged. And so I just knew, you kind of go through it and a lot of it is, you know, we're very analytical as people who go into medicine, but I think it's underappreciated how much of medicine and decision making is just your gut feeling. And I just knew.
Yeah. And it's also interesting, especially as a medical student, as far as I can tell, that your rotation that you have in that field can really make or break you. You might have an awesome internal med rotation, and it might not really be what your experience as a practitioner will be, or vice versa. You might have a terrible experience on OB or something, and then really it wouldn't be like that as a practitioner, but you're just completely turned away from it. So it's lucky that it turned out perfectly for you. That's awesome. Cause I'm sure you can't imagine yourself doing anything different as far as a specialty, right?
I really can't. I really can't. I was very glad I went this route.
Absolutely. Now, as far as that specialty goes, it is a pretty much male dominated specialty. How did you feel? Did you kind of feel any disparity yourself in your training as a woman, or did you kind of feel that wasn't an issue in your training?
You know, I think that the disparities exist and that it's definitely a problem. And there is a wide variety of experiences there. And I think it depends on the culture of the program and where you train and who exactly you're spending your time with. Because, you know, I think for me personally, I've definitely come across disparities. I've come across gender bias, but it did not, you know, color my experience to the point where I was turned away. And unfortunately, there are women out there who were really either turned off to orthopedics before even getting there. And then there are also women colleagues of mine who have gone through training. They are attending physicians, and either during their training or even in their work environment now, there are inequities that make practicing orthopedics very hard and makes it hard to have the career satisfaction that I think one should if their love is orthopedics. So it is definitely out there. For me personally, the main thing that I encountered when I was a medical student and I decided to go into orthopedics, I was actually really surprised because I had already made up my mind. So it wasn't like someone saying, oh, girls don't do that. Oh, you don't look strong enough for that. It wasn't like someone saying that was going to make me question my decision. I already knew that that's what I wanted to do. But those were the comments that I would get. And it would be occasionally from fellow students, but not much. I think the people who are in your class kind of understand and that you go for what you're interested in. And, you know, my classmates were all supportive, but it came more from other attendings that I would rotate with. So like the psych attending or the peds attending or my OB attending, And you know, comments that I think if I wasn't so sure, or if I was just thinking about it, maybe would have turned me away. And I have talked to women that I've kind of met virtually on social media that said, gosh, you know, I really wanted to do orthopedics, but somebody said da 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 da, and now I don't know. But I think that a lot of times people don't realize the power of just a couple of words and how you can really shape and influence somebody's decision making in choosing a career. And oftentimes, you know, the for the worse, which is too bad.
Yeah, it's a shame, and it's always based on kind of their own limitations. I hate when people put their limitations on others because they don't, you know, no one knows what you or I or whoever else is capable of. It's just what they're incapable of, and they kind of put that on, project that onto others. And it's one of the worst human qualities, I think, is that kind of just negative projection. But people like you are a great example of persevering through that, and I love it. So that's awesome.
You know, and that reminds me of something that I had that realization, because there was one time where I was like, huh, you know, that's kind of a crappy thing to say to somebody. And it was one of my OB attendings when I was a medical student. And he was kind of, it's funny, he is kind of maybe stereotypically what you would think an orthopedic surgeon would be. So he was just kind of tall and really muscular, and he was just, you know, a lifelong jock, you know, tough guy. And I told him, yeah, I'm applying to orthopedics. And he goes, huh, yeah, you know, you should probably reconsider that. And I was like, oh, really? Why? And he said, well, you know, I thought about going into orthopedics. I thought I was going to be an orthopedic surgeon, but then, you know, I realized that OB was for me. And he didn't really expand much more beyond that. But I couldn't help in the back of my mind thinking, you wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. I don't think you got
Yeah, exactly.
in. You know, and it was like, maybe that's where the projection came from. So I don't know. I mean, I'll keep it anonymous. So, you know, it's definitely crossed the back of my mind, but it was just the tone in which it was said to me, and I think it was his own personal bias, you know, that where that comment came from.
That's a shame. Yeah, and again, it's just him projecting his losses on you. And you know what? You didn't have to listen to it, and I'm glad you didn't, because we wouldn't be having this talk today. So that's awesome.
And by no means is that anything negative that I'm saying about OB at all. I do not want to give that impression. It was just the interaction with that particular one, you know, OB-GYN that I was like, yeah, that's too bad that he's telling people not to go into whatever field because he's colored by his own experiences, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. Not a reflection on the field of OB, just more of a
Not
reflection
at
on him.
all.
Yeah, that's true. Yep, exactly. So, do you think that you, well, I guess not think, but have you experienced more of kind of that opposition from men or women, or kind of a little bit of both?
You know, it's interesting. I think it may be a little bit more men, but I certainly got a lot of comments from women as well. And some of those comments are you know, pretty benign. Just people are like, oh, really? I'm surprised that you're going in orthopedics. You know, your hands are so small, or you know,
Yes.
or right, you know, it's not like they're trying to insult you about your hand size, but you know, I think sometimes people are just we all have these implicit biases, and so when we're surprised by something like that, where a woman is going to say, hey, you know, I'm going to go into orthopedics, then I think sometimes you can't help it but blurt out what the first thing that comes to mind.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, that's really that's interesting to get it. That's not really opposition, like, oh, you won't make it. It's more of just, really? That's funny though. Yeah, I can see it. I can see it. And it's funny too that it happens across so many different fields. It'll be, oh, your race is this, so you shouldn't do this particular field, or your gender is this, so you shouldn't do a particular field, or
True.
I don't know where that comes from. Like, we're all just human beings
Yeah.
with capabilities and imperfections, and one particular gender or race doesn't necessarily make you not available. What's the word I'm looking for? Not disqualified from that particular thing. Now, granted, there might
Right.
be something like, okay, if we're doing a strong man competition, I think women in general will have a disadvantage, maybe just
We just have
genetically.
less. Yeah, right. You're not going to pit
Exactly.
an 80-pound woman against a 250-pound person and see who's going to bench more. You know, I mean,
Right, exactly.
that's just pure physics, right? But I
Right.
mean, as far as choosing what career you want, I think that, you know, a lot of women are demonstrating that they're breaking these gender barriers and don't have to be subject to what's traditionally thought of as a, you know, a male-dominated field and being limited by that. I still get it today, you know. I mean, yeah, I'll meet people in a completely social setting where, you know, my career doesn't come up, my title doesn't come up, and like for example, I volunteer the junior league, and the you know it'll come up at some point in the conversation that I'm a surgeon, not even just orthopedics, but that I'm a doctor or that I'm a surgeon. They're like, huh. You don't really look like a surgeon, you know, and it's like, well, what's a surgeon supposed to look like? And you know, and there's that great campaign that's all over social media. I look like a surgeon, and I think that's great. A lot of women will post pictures of themselves just being themselves, not always operating, just kind of being moms, being, you know, cat moms, dog moms, and surfers and snowboarders and whatever. Makes them who they are, and despite that, right, they still look like a surgeon. I love the statement that it makes.
That is really cool. Yeah, it's kind of like the other one, the like love me in my scrubs, hate me in my hoodie, kind of that as well.
That's I have not seen that, but that is a great point.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
it's interesting. Like, you don't look like a doctor or a surgeon. It's like, what is a sur you know, I know the answer to the stereotypical what does a surgeon look like, but it's so silly. And
Yeah.
you know, I think we were talking about kind of just like things that men and women may, the few things that men and women may have an advantage over the other. And I think one, my mom, for example, was my kind of role model in the sense of she's just a tough lady. And I think a lot of times women get discredited when like women are tough. It's just hard. I mean, a lot of women will carry a baby and still work to the last second. They'll come back to work a few weeks later and they'll still keep just being, you know, they don't take it out on their coworkers that they're pregnant. They don't let the crazy change in hormones make them, you know, irritable. Just my mom, for example, she was, you know, had a really bad thyroid disorder when I was a kid, and I was a loud, hyper kid, and she worked nights in the ICU as a nurse. She was never mean to me, never impatient, anything like that. And so she's just fighting all those different things, but was just, you know, a soldier through it. And it's funny that people still look down on women. It's so annoying. I just because of my mom, I'm really, really adamant about the kind of just gender equality thing. So,
You're
so
he for she, which is awesome.
right, yeah. Sorry about the rant, but it's just more just like, you know, everyone.
No,
You know,
great.
if you're not good at something, it's because you're not good, not because of the way you were born. That's my opinion. So I
Yeah,
have no shame
yeah.
in being like, you are not good at this, but it's only because you've proven that you're not good, not because of just not the bias of it. So rant over, I swear, I promise. But yeah, so that's interesting too, and I guess that kind of leads into the question I wanted to ask about your podcast. And first of all, thanks for being on mine, obviously, but yours, kind of the 6% podcast, that kind of looks at the disparity of women in various professions in general, not just health. How'd you kind of get into that?
Yeah, so well, I named it the 6% with Nancy MD because in orthopedics, there are several different numbers out there, but one of the ones that I'd seen quoted more often is that women in the percentage of women in practice in orthopedics hovers right around 6%. And the idea for this podcast has really been brewing in the back of my mind for a long, long time. It was years ago when I was a resident and walking through an airport, getting on a plane, and I saw a woman captain. And I had another friend that I knew from residency, a friend of a friend who was an airline pilot. She was a woman. And so from her, I learned that the number of stripes you have, you can on your shoulder, you can tell if this is the captain or if this the, what do you call it, the first, having a brain fart.
Lieutenant, I think. Is it first lieutenant?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't remember
So,
either. But yeah.
right. And so I saw a woman and I was like counting her stripes and I was like, ooh, she's a captain. And I realized that we just don't see a lot of women pilots, you know, commercial airline pilots or any kind of pilots, really, for that matter. And I was reflecting on how few women are in orthopedics and thinking, hey, you know, even though we are in completely different fields, I bet she has a lot of similar experiences as I have had. And wouldn't it be cool to go grab a cup of coffee with her or grab a glass of wine after her flight, of course. We know pilots, we don't want them to fly with wine on board, right?
Yeah, it's not the 70s anymore, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, but I was like, gosh, it would be so cool to sit down and have a cup of coffee with her and just ask her, hey, what was it like for you? And what kind of barriers did you have? And who were your role models? And so that seed had been planted a long time before, and it wasn't until in the last several months and over the last year that it started to come together as a podcast. And I had been thinking a lot about it and thinking about who I would talk to. And I made the decision to not just make it medicine, not just make it orthopedics, and really have a really broad range of different kinds of career paths in which there aren't a lot of women represented. And how cool would it be to just talk to them? You know, and so I was starting to really formulate how I wanted to do this, and then COVID hit, and my practice had slowed down, and I was just worried about everything, right? Worried about public health, worried about my family, worried about my husband, who's an ICU doc, worried about my practice and the business, and you know, I think I spent a week or two just kind of down in the dumps, worrying about everything. And then I was like, all these hopes and dreams for, you know, having this podcast, you know, I felt like I had lost it. But then I had this sudden realization that, well, this is actually the best time to start recording and start to put this together because we can still be connected virtually, even as we're social distance and even as we're all under quarantine. And as I started to reach out to women to see if they would be willing to interview, and a lot of them were just cold calls. I found them on Twitter. I would like something that they said and that they tweeted out, and then I would, you know, in this public forum be like, "Hey, I would love to talk to you on my podcast. Can I message you?" And you know, a lot of people, you can't message them unless they follow you. And so then we would connect and I'd message them, and the support and the interest that I got was overwhelming. So a lot of women that normally would have been these, you know, badass, heavy hitter CEOs flying all over the world, meetings all the time, all of a sudden was like, well, I kind of don't have anything to do right now, so it's a perfect time. Yeah, I would love to do your podcast. And so that's how I ended up connecting with the first full-time female hitting coach in Major League Baseball because she's like, yep, everything's on pause. So let's set up a time to talk. And I talked to the women of Avestria Ventures. It's a two women venture capitalists, and there aren't a lot of women in that field. They're like, yeah, we're not flying across the globe anymore, so now's a good time to talk. And it ended up being kind of this little spark of hope and happiness in my life as we're thinking about all the doom and gloom of worrying about public health and the economy and It was this little spot of joy for me where I was able to get this podcast off the ground and have all these amazing women be willing participants in having a role in it. So it ended up being perfect timing. So I launched in June, and I keep finding these amazing women to interview. So I've already got season two recorded. I'm moving on to season three, and it's just been a very, very positive reception.
That's awesome. I really liked it. I've listened to a couple episodes and I just find it really interesting
Thank
concept.
you.
Like you said, it's not just women in medicine, it's women in a lot of fields that are kind of underserved or underpopulated by other women. So that's awesome. It's a cool concept and I'm sure you'll never run out of guests, possible guests, you know. That's going to be a easy flow in for you. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it'll be great to keep it going.
So, along kind of those lines and everything we've talked about, what do you see for yourself in the future, both as a practitioner and everything outside of healthcare?
Well, I love being an orthopedic surgeon, but I also love doing a number of other things, and so I think it's in my foreseeable future that I'm going to be juggling not just one career. I plan to continue to be an orthopedic surgeon. My subspecialty is in sports and arthroscopy, and I have a particular love for the shoulder. And so I plan to continue to be in private practice here in Portland. And as far as like all my other so-called side projects, I would love to continue to grow this podcast and get more ears on it, get more wonderful guests on, and I have plans to kind of segue into the topic that I talk about on my podcast into written form, so a book. I already blog, so a lot of the things that we talk about and topics on the podcast are on my blog, nancymd.com. But I would like to turn a lot of that content into something more long form, in the form of a book. So I have a lot of different ideas and projects, and I'll probably keep my hands dipped in a number of different buckets for some time.
Awesome. Well, I like that a lot, and I'm looking forward to the future developments as well. So,
Thank you.
definitely excited. So, I know we're kind of on a bit of a time crunch, so I wanted to, while I still have the time, ask you the wrap-up questions, and maybe we can just kind of go from there. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Sweet. All right. So, I ask these four questions to every single guest, and you can just take as much time as you want, fill them out, and then we'll go from there. So, the first question is, has medicine been what you expected?
Yes and no. I think on the positive side, I knew that it would be rewarding to make people better, but I don't think I knew how good it would feel to, and this always sounds funny, but to discharge a patient, from my clinic. Meaning they came in with an injury or a problem. I took care of them non-operatively, and perhaps they had a shoulder surgery, and shoulder surgery plus the rehab after shoulder surgery is not fun. Like compared to having a total hip, where the post-op rehab, you wake up and you're like, oh my gosh, my pain is gone. A lot of times with shoulder surgeries, the patients sort of hate me for a little while until they get through the initial discomfort and get their motion back and get their strength back. And to get them to the point where I'm like, well, you don't have any restrictions. I want you to go back to your regular life. You don't need to see me anymore. And we say goodbye. I mean, that feeling is like indescribable, A lot of times you don't think about saying goodbye to a patient as such a positive thing, but that is, it's great because you're like, fly, baby bird, you're on your own. And so I think that was one of the really pleasant surprises of being in medicine, as far as just not, you can say, oh yeah, I want to go into this because it's rewarding, but then to actually feel it and experience it, it's pretty indescribable. And and maybe on the flip side of that, they don't tell you how much paperwork there's gonna be.
I'm only just scratching the surface as a resident, but I definitely
Yeah.
can attest.
Yeah, I think there's a, in most settings in medicine, there's a lot of paperwork, there's a lot of red tape, and there are a lot of inefficiencies. And we don't always know about that going into medical school. We don't always know about that even, heading into residency. And then once you're the person who has to sign all the papers and sign off on things as an attending, that's when you go, oh my gosh, my inbox is so full.
Well, as a survivor of shoulder surgery myself, I can attest to the initial hate and hatred and future love, but there's definitely a lot of paperwork. That's true. And but it is rewarding, minus the paperwork. So yeah, you're
Yeah,
absolutely right.
absolutely.
So the next question is, in your opinion, what are keys to success in medicine?
There are so many, but I'll try to pick a couple that are the highlights. I think that hard work alone is not enough. That's one piece of it, having a good work ethic. But in addition to having a good work ethic is also humility. I think we've all read and heard about doctors and surgeons kind of having a God complex, and I think that that does not make for a good physician. It's the opposite. And while we acknowledge that we have a lot of knowledge and we have a lot of skill in these hands, I think having humility is what makes you more able to connect with your patient and the patient's family. And being a good team player, having humility makes you a good team player because you recognize that even though, for example, in the OR, you're the surgeon, you're a little bit you're captaining a ship in many ways, acknowledging that every single person in that room, the circulating nurse, the scrub tech, the student who's, assisting you, or the resident, the anesthesiologist, everybody is important. And even when you're making rounds on the floor, the person bringing the trays of food, the person cleaning the rooms, especially in these COVID times, we've recognized just how important our sanitary engineering staff, the janitors at the hospital, what a vital role that is. And I think if you carry that humility with you and you recognize how important all the other people around you are that help you help make your patients better, then I think that is ultimately, together with that good work ethic, is going to bring you success.
Awesome. I love that. That's beautifully said. So that kind of feeds into the third question, which is, as a full-blown attending, looking back on, current residents, current medical students, even pre-meds trying to get in, what is your advice to those on their way up?
And so you're saying, what's my advice to the current med students and the current residents?
Just anyone kind of on their way up to becoming an attending, what would you be to any
Okay.
stage? Yep, any stage along the way, what is your advice?
Well, I think the key is to make sure you continue to do things that make you happy and that you're working to leave a legacy. Sometimes people will get into a residency or get out into practice and they are miserable. And in medicine, a lot of times we feel like you're on this train and you can't get off. And it's simply not true. You can't change directions. And if you find that what you're doing is not really stoking your passion, then you have to ask yourself those hard questions, and it's okay to pivot, and it may just be pivoting in terms of, maybe your practice isn't right for you, or maybe the split, like for people in academics, split between research and clinical isn't quite right. Maybe you've chosen the wrong specialty, and it's okay. Like, you think about what would happen if you said, well, I'm just going to push through this because this is the track that I'm on and this is what I'm supposed to do. You would end up miserable in 20 or 30 years. And so I think, I think having frequent check-ins with yourself on whether what you're doing still resonates with your values is incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing those tidbits, and I think that's really helpful information. And the last question is completely different of the first three. If you woke up tomorrow and you were 10 years old and you had to do everything over again to get to where you are today, would you do it all over again?
Yes, I wouldn't change a thing. I don't think I
Awesome.
would change a thing. Yeah.
Awesome. I asked that to everyone and I've yet to get a no. So I'm glad we're still, everyone's still staying strong so far. That's good. So,
Yeah, our experiences shape us. I think if I changed something, then I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't be where I am today. And so, you kind of have to look back and look at things that may, in some circles, be looked at as mistakes or detours, and in a negative fashion, and you just have to say, you know what, that struggle, that experience, that shaped who I am today, and without it, I wouldn't be here.
absolutely. And then, worst of all, you wouldn't have ended up on the podcast with me, that'd have been the worst part. So,
Exactly.
well, I've been diligently watching the time and I know our time is pretty much up. So I just want to say thank you so much for being a guest and, sharing a little bit of your story and just kind of, your insight on the world of medicine. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It was so much fun to talk to you, and I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. I'd love to maybe in the future have you on again just to see how everything's coming and see how your podcast is progressing and see how this one's progressing and kind of everything else in between. And it would be great to have you on again in the future.
Happy to.
All right. Well, I hope you have a great evening. Enjoy yourself. And thank you again for being a guest.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a good one. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was Dr. Shipley, orthopedic surgeon. Thank you so much for listening. And to those in the game and those on their way up, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you.
Thank you.